It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios coming to you live from the Gaylord Hotel in National Harbor, Maryland. It's pretty a striking place, and every year for the last, I'm not sure, I'll have to ask my next guest. CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, has taken place, and anyone who is anyone in the conservative world, including international, always descends on this place at this time. And, of course, this is a critical time in our nation for a number of reasons. But Dan Schneider, who I've known for a long time, is the executive director of the American Conservative Union, and he joins me this morning. Good morning, Dan.
Hey, good morning, Sandy.
Yeah, I think that this has to be the biggest.
Yeah, this is the first time we've actually sold out. If you didn't buy a ticket, I'm sorry. You can watch it live on TV or stream, but you can't get it anymore.
Well, that is important to say, that people can, if they go to CPAC.com, CPAC.org, or whatever it is, that they can watch all the events. And even if they, you know, television only shows a few. Fox just shows a few things, but you can live stream it.
You can live stream it.
And it's worth doing. I mean, goodness, there's so many wonderful guests.
We have millions and millions, tens of millions of people all over the world who watch it on live stream.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
You know, I see the change, Dan, in the Radio Row. I could see, like, I used to sit over there, and now I'm down here. But it's because radio, everything's expanded. So you've got all your television stations down that first corridor, and now all the radio stations on this corridor. So, I'm glad to see that. I really am. I'm sure it's overwhelming sometimes, though.
Well, look, there are two things going on. We have a president who is pursuing conservative results in government, returning power to the people, fighting for pro-life causes. I'm sure your audience knows this. Most Americans don't. Planned Parenthood, under discretionary funding at HHS, has completely been cut out of the loop. The $60 million they used to get every year, zeroed out.
And the court has just upheld that decision by the president. Yeah. I mean, it's a stunning time.
Yeah.
And you know what, Dan? The thing of it is, there's so much news. Important things like that don't get emphasized like they should.
Right.
Like we're all swept up in the coronavirus, and I'm sure you're going to have Gordon Chang and other. Gordon's going to join us here in a minute.
Good.
But you've got a lot of experts here to talk about that. And what other topics, when you guys tried to plan this a year ago, what kinds of things are you trying to cover?
Well, look, our theme this year is America versus socialism. And what so many people don't get is that socialism is much more than economics. Socialism destroys humanity. It destroys our right to free speech, to practice our faith, to live out our faith. It destroys who we are as a nation. It tears down our borders. Socialism is destructive of everything we believe in. So that's what this CPAC is about. It's highlighting the difference between what America was founded to be versus what socialists want us to be.
Yeah, and of course, that's a theme for any of us that are paying attention, certainly on radio. I was just trying to make that case to our young people. I think a lot of times we take for granted that they understand what we understand, and they don't.
Yeah.
They don't. They have no historical reference, and so we have to paint very vivid pictures. You guys are going to be doing that here, I'm sure.
Yeah, we are. In fact, in just another maybe half hour, we're going to have what we call curated speeches, a set of people each giving a speech. So KT McFarland will be the MC of this. Liz Cheney will talk about how socialism destroys a nation, their borders and security. Mercy Schlapp, or Mercedes Schlapp, is going to talk about how socialism destroys who we are as people, as a humanity, our faith and our culture, how it destroys it. So it's going to be really good.
Dan, you have kids, younger kids. My son is...
Not so much. They're not so young anymore.
not so young anymore. But I know mine, too. But you have discussions with them about socialism?
Yeah, so I've got, my oldest son is about to graduate from college, my middle son is in college, but they went to good schools. They're going to good schools where they don't have to combat these ideas all the time, and my youngest is getting ready to graduate from high school. But it's just stunning, just in the last 5 years, to see the difference It's shocking how young people have been slowly cooked into believing that socialism is somehow a good thing, that democratic socialism is somehow different from just pure socialism.
You know, I was interviewing Paul Kinger, who's an expert on communism,
right.
Socialism, and
right.
I think he's going to be here. I know he is. And he was saying that the Gramsci school of communism, that's one of their, the words that he uses is part of their school. It's a buzzword. And, of course, that it means it's a code word. Bernie Sanders, of course, is a communist. He is by every definition. There's no wiggle room, but he just doesn't want to use that word yet. Mm-hmm. But that's exactly what he is. But the others on the platform, Nancy Pelosi just said yesterday that she would support Bernie Sanders if he's the nominee. She's not so up in arms about it.
Well, one interesting thing, or nice thing even, is that smart political operatives like Nancy Pelosi have known that they've got to slowly indoctrinate the American public into what they want to achieve. Bernie Sanders has taken the Band-Aid off of that.
Yeah.
And AOC, it's like, just this is what we believe. Nancy Pelosi wishes that they weren't so clear about what they really are pursuing. She is trying to be more careful at achieving these
ends. But what you're saying is that there's no distance between what she's been pushing and what they're pushing.
Same thing.
Just much more sneaky about it.
Yeah.
And Pete Buttigieg too. Oh no, what's it? You know, his whole background is his dad was a Marxist, you know. But he's more of the Barack Obama smooth kind of guy.
Exactly.
And so yeah, this is a crucial time, Dan.
They all believe the same thing.
Yeah. Yes, they do.
They do.
Yeah. So we have to be clear about that. We have to find ways to tell our kids things that we take for granted that they don't quite comprehend. So what makes this CPAC unique to you?
Wow. Well, it's not unique that we have the president and vice president back again. They've been here the last three years,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's great that they're back. We've got a majority of the cabinet. And we've got just so many great people. But I think what's different about this CPAC maybe is that we have more people from abroad, from overseas, who are coming to say, America, don't give up. When we were in Australia for CPAC Australia, this gentleman came up to me. And, you know, Australians generally are very opposed to gun rights. But this gentleman came up to me and said, Dan, don't give up on the Second Amendment. Because if Americans lose their Second Amendment rights, we in Australia will lose all of our rights. The world is relying on us to be free.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true, Dan. And it's been true for even longer than Trump's presidency. When George Bush was standing strong on certain things like life, I remember I was in Ottawa, Canada speaking, and I had people come to me and just say to me, just pull me aside and say, we look to you. Not me, personally. To America. We look to you. You give us hope.
We look to you, Sandy.
I don't think that's what she meant, but thank you. No, and you're right. While the left would have us believe that the whole world holds us in disdain, not under President Trump. I don't believe that. Well, do you? All right, so you have a CPAC Australia, but you're having others, right?
Japan, Korea, Brazil.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll be announcing in a couple more days the next expansion. So I'm not going to be able to say it now. But we also have had CPACs in Israel, and we had a pop-up CPAC in Hong Kong. We snuck into Hong Kong.
Oh, really?
Oh, and that was just fabulous. We knew the Chinese Communist Party would prevent us from entering if they knew we were coming in. But we were with all the protesters, and we had these pop-up CPACs. It was really exciting.
Wow, that's really something. You have, as a guest this time, I am just going blank. It's the father of Brexit. He's here. What's his name?
Oh, Nigel Farage.
Nigel Farage. Yeah. I wanted Nigel to be on the show. I know Katie Hopkins pretty well. I told her I was going to shout at him. Katie Hopkins sends her love, and maybe I could get him over here. But I haven't seen him. But what's he going to be talking about? Brexit or?
I don't know. I've not talked with Nigel. But he was with us in Australia for CPAC Australia.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
And but you know, he is the godfather of Brexit. He's been fighting this since 2004. Back when people would snicker at him at the idea that the UK would ever be free of the European Union. And, you know, he won. And that's what we need to learn. Never give up. Yeah. Never surrender.
Yeah.
Fight until we win.
Yeah, because that is exactly what's happening. Well, Britain is still on the precipice, but they've won tremendous gains, especially that last election.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, so the highlights would be, probably President Trump speaking Saturday morning, probably Vice President Pence speaking this morning, but other notable guests that you're, I know something. that I'm excited about. Ann and Phila McClear are bringing FBI Lovebirds, that stage play.
That's tonight.
The email and text of Peter Strzok and Lisa Page.
Yes. We were really excited to put that on, but I'll tell you, maybe if I've been most surprised about one thing about the CPAC, it's how angry the left is that we're having this play on our stage.
What have they done? I'd just be curious. Can you say?
Well,
they are angry. They tried to shut it down in D.C. the first time it ran. You know that.
Yeah, I did. But I just I didn't realize that they would be so angry about it. And, of course, all the play is the text messages. It's just, we've got Superman and Buffy the Vampire Slayer reading the lines of the text messages.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, that's not fake
news. It's public knowledge.
That is actual facts. And the left is just furious. I finally realized why. At least here's my hypothesis. The left has always been so good at making fun of us through Saturday Night Live, that sort of thing. And we're doing the same thing to them now. And they don't like it. They don't like that we are parodying, who they are.
We should do more of that. And, of course, Ann and Phila McClear are excellent at that. They are excellent at that. So that's one event. You got a couple of other movies and events like that. Anything else that's notable to you that we wouldn't know unless we read that whole agenda?
Look, there are things that are really fun and exciting. There are things that I am very passionate about that some might not find as interesting.
Like what?
Well, like intellectual property rights.
Yeah, I
put lots of people
really
to sleep probably.
No, I'm with you totally.
If we cannot own our ideas, if we cannot own what we create, we are slaves. And we have to understand this. Just like I am 100% pro-life, we have to. And if we are not pro-life, we are devaluing humanity. If we devalue what we think with our minds and what we create, we take away freedom of religion. These are fundamental rights. If we take these away, we destroy ourselves.
This is something that I do think we've totally lost touch with why that's so important, Dan. And I know that our founding fathers, they ensured that people could own their own creation, their own intellectual, the stuff that they created, like Ben Franklin and his kites or whatever. They actually wrote that in.
Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah. Because under King George, nothing belonged to you. So, and we now take that for granted. We have flourished. People have invented stuff. Normal people have prospered because of their minds.
That's right.
And now we've lost that notion that that's important. So I'm totally with you. So you're going to do something on intellectual? You're talking about...
Sandy, I am not surprised that you are a full-spectrum, solid conservative.
Yeah, don't be surprised. I'm sure there are other things I could cover, but most things I try... I know a little bit about everything, Dan, except sports and dogs. That's what I always say. Don't ask me about dogs or sports. I was doing an interview with O'Reilly one time, and I said something a baseball halftime or something like that.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so don't ask me about sports. It's not a good idea. But so, Dan, what are you in charge of? What's your specific niche this next few days?
Well, I'm the guy behind the scenes. Matt Schlapp is the chairman of ACU, and so he's the face of ACU, and I'm behind the scenes making sure everything happens.
So you're doing – you're over – I can't believe you're sitting here with me.
Oh,
no,
it's a pleasure.
No, but I'm honored because I know – heavens, to try to run something like this. You do have great staff.
Well, I have a phenomenal staff.
Yeah.
They're the best.
But still, So when's Vice President Pence speaking? He's speaking
about
pretty
noon.
About noon?
Yeah, he's about noon.
Yeah, and security is pretty interesting now.
It's tight.
Did they make you go through that too?
Oh my goodness, the long snake we all had to follow.
Yes.
And up and down and sideways and backwards to get around here,
I was interrogated about my bag. This guy, why have you got that? Why did you bring that in here? I said, well, I'm doing a radio show. I have stuff in it, Anyway. Well, it's always a pleasure to be here, Dan, and I just appreciate being included, and it's a fascinating time in our country. And aren't we, as stressful as it is, aren't we grateful that God has chosen to place us in positions where we can actually fight?
Amen.
I know people listening to the show all the time saying, what can I do? And there are things that they can do, but we have a special place, more responsibility, but a special opportunity to actually do something. And I thank you for what you're doing, Dan.
God bless you, Sam.
Yeah, thank you. Same to you. Dan Schneider, Executive Director of CPAC, Sandy Rios in the morning. Stay tuned. A former member of Antifa, one of Dan's best friends, comes up next. I'm just kidding. I'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. You know, the charitable gift annuity concept is more important today than probably ever. It is something that you have heard me talk about for many, many years. And right now, for now, the tax code is still allowing charitable organizations to establish a charitable gift annuity so that you can be guaranteed permanent income for the rest of your life. Don't waste any time. So many of you have IRAs, 401k money. Peel off a piece of that. Establish your charitable gift annuity so that you have a portion of permanent income that you know is never going to change for the rest of your life. Would you do it today? Call AFA Foundation, 800-326-4543. Extension 345. That's 800-326-4543. Extension 345.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Dan Scavino, White House Director of Social Media and Assistant to the President. Mr. Scavino manages social media accounts while supporting the president's work in conjunction with White House staff. Proverbs 25:11 reminds us of the importance of effective communication. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Dan Scavino as he advises and serves the president. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. Last July, a group of South Carolina UPS drivers gathered in the parking lot before the start of their shift to have a moment of prayer. By January, that prayer meeting had grown to about 60 UPS workers, and it also caught the attention of management. One of the workers was told by a manager they could no longer pray on company property because it might offend other people and violate the religious rights of other workers. Not too long afterwards, several drivers who had been regulars in the prayer group were fired, and many of the drivers believe the firings were retaliation. Liberty Counsel, a law firm that specializes in First Amendment cases, sent a demand letter to UPS calling for the workers to be reinstated and the prayer ban lifted. They say that ban violates Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. UPS is not talking, but until the ban is lifted, Starnes Media Group will be sending our packages through FedEx. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Are you going to join?
Yeah.
Are you guys?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Sandy Rios with you. Never a dull moment here. We're sitting here at CPAC 2020, and I want to make sure I get in two guests, and then Marsha Blackburn is coming, and there's Gordon Chang. Now I'm all backed up. Oh, all right. So, Gabriel, I want to talk to you. Gabriel Nogales is with Leadership Institute, and he's sitting with Cabot Phillips, right? How are you, Cabot? I interviewed you when you first came on board 100 years ago. Gosh, let's get you a microphone. So, all right, we have to do this. If Senator Blackburn comes, we have to shift everything. So it's the way it is in Washington. Mm-hmm. When senators come, everybody, you know.
Understandable.
Yeah, well, anyway. So, Gabriel, how did Gabriel come to your attention, Cabot?
So Gabriel works with the Leadership Institute in our field program, and Gabe, you know, was one of the top activist organizers on campus for the conservative movement, and it's funny because he started out on the left as a member of Antifa, and has completely switched sides, and is now helping conservative students organize and activate for conservative causes on campus.
Gabriel, what was it about Antifa that drew you? What was the part that you really, really saw that you liked and you wanted to be part of?
Well, honestly, Antifa sounds like a good idea. I mean, as Americans, we can all say that we're anti-fascism, but what Antifa is not fighting fascism. When you look at all of the history of what Antifa has done over the several decades that it's been around, it's never about fighting actual fascists, it's about fighting capitalism. In fact, there was a government report in Germany which they quoted an Antifa group from Munich, Germany, and they said that the fight against fascism is not over until capitalism is destroyed.
But you didn't know that when you were in. I mean, when you joined and you were doing what you were doing, what did you think you were doing?
Well, the first time I ever wore the black mask was in 2011, and it was to oppose the National Socialist Movement, which is, again, a neo-Nazi group.
Okay, so I see that. That would be a righteous cause.
Yeah. Definitely. But unfortunately, that's not the only things that I did. There was a lot of other... That was my first time doing something, but then there was also some destruction of property going around or just different activism projects that I did for about 2 years.
And when you started, you mentioned out how you were protesting as part of the Occupy Wall Street movement, and you actually went to the home of a CEO and you were yelling things at the CEO's home and trying to intimidate people as part of the group, I should say.
Yeah. So that one was around 2011. Or 2012, rather, when I went to the home of a CEO because he had a contract, or his company had a contract with a French airline to transport monkeys to the United States to do animal testing. So a group of about 10 or 15 of us, we went and we would yell obscenities and just hateful things outside of his home to intimidate him. But the funny thing is that he was never there. But the sad thing is that we knew that. Because the point was never to try to have a conversation with him. It's to harass his community so that he would be forced to do what we said or be kicked out of his own community.
You know, in the 60s, the radical leftist movement, I don't know if you know much about that. You'd probably find that fascinating, whether underground and the other protesters. There were a lot of young people and a lot of them my age who got involved in that. But they just were... They wanted to fight they wanted to protest the Vietnam War. They wanted to stop nuclear power. They wanted to, that's what they thought they were doing. Or they just wanted to have fun and disobey a little bit. Mm-hmm. But then there was a small percentage who knew exactly what they were doing. They were the masterminds, and they were the ones who pulled people in and knew exactly what the strategy was, which was really revolution in the United States. So would you say that, based on your knowledge now, do you think that's true of Antifa? Like most people are thinking they're doing, I don't know, even if it's rebellious, it's something for a good cause.
There is an organized effort, and it honestly comes from college campuses. There's countless of professors that see themselves as activists and not educators. They're indoctrinating a lot of their students and teaching them what to think instead of how to think. Yeah. I mean, just a few weeks ago, we had a professor from New York University who was the organizer of a riot which cost New Yorkers $100,000 in property damage. And he was teaching a class on militant activism. And we have countless stories like this that we report on at the Leadership Institute's campus reform of professors just indoctrinating their students.
Yes, well, we certainly know all about that, and it's just disgusting. But my question for you is, what was that thing where you said, wait, there's a great movie out. Justice Thomas was a radical leftist, mm-hmm. part of the black radical movement in the 60s. And there was a moment for him where they were doing some destruction on a college campus, and it was kind of a wake-up call for him. He said, he felt a lot of guilt about the personal stuff he'd done. I don't know if there's anything like that in your life. It doesn't have to be, but was there a moment where you said, wait, I don't think this is what I want to be doing?
Well, I personally identify a lot with his story because, I mean, I grew up in poverty, being from Mexico City, but the moment that really hit me is because I was being introduced to free market ideas around high school, my senior year.
But from whom?
From, surprisingly, my government teacher and my economics teacher were actually conservative.
How interesting.
I didn't know that at the time.
We found the one.
But
it's good, Kevin.
I started being introduced to these ideas, and I just kind of found them interesting. But whenever I kind of played devil's advocate with some of the Antifa members, instead of kind of responding to me, they would just start using the same tactics of intimidation against me. And it made me realize that this was not a group that really accepted people. They just wanted philosophical purity.
Yeah. Yes, and dangerous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just dangerous. Something about it is just not... You can protest without being that odious and dark and stealthy and harming people that are innocent, really. That's the part that, you know, there's so much more to say about that. Cabot, can you wrap this up for us? I mean, are you optimistic? I mean, you see kids, young men like Gabriel, Gabriel, who've had a life change. So that should be encouraging to you guys with all the work that you're doing on campuses.
Yeah, I'm optimistic that more Americans are paying attention. Shows like yours are giving a platform to this issue, because I think if we don't pay attention to what's going on the college campus, then the next generation will go to the political left and will vote for socialist candidates like Bernie Sanders. Over 70% of people under the age of 25 now say they will vote or would vote for a socialist candidate. And people ask why that's happening, it's because of what's going on at college campuses. There was a recent study National Association of Scholars put together. They looked at political donations from professors. 95-1 was the ratio of people donating as professors to Democrat causes over Republican causes. They analyzed 13,000 professors. 22 of them donated to Republican or conservative causes out of those 13,000.
And the thing of it is, that's not even new, Cabot. That particular stat is new. But it's been that way. You know, again, it's my generation. I was, you know, Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers. I know all about this, and I lived through that. So my generation went into college campuses. I'm trying to produce while I'm talking to Cabot, poor Cabot. But Cabot, let's make a plan to talk again longer when I'm back in studio. We'll do it by phone, because I'd love to talk to you. But Leadership Institute is doing great work on college campuses. Cabot, thanks for your leadership on that. And Gabriel, welcome to reality and truth.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really nice to meet you.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much. All right, Gordon Chang is Gordon. Oh, that's all right. No, that's okay. Gordon, hi. How are you?
I'm fine. And sorry, Sandy.
No, that's all right. We're on the air already right now.
Okay, great.
So, Gordon, by the way, you know, is an author of a number of books about China, one about North Korea. He's a national treasure, really, in his expertise on China. He is Chinese and Scottish, which I always love. You know what? I think, Tim, it may be my headset. I've got
to change this cable. Maybe the cable.
Okay.
So
all right. And anyway, we're just going to, since people are listening, we're just going to keep on talking. Hang on 1 second. Testing, 1, 2. Check. Testing. Testing, 1, 2. Check. Testing. Okay, there we are. Oh, I think that's better, Tim. Yeah. Sorry, we have to do technical producing everything while people are listening all over the country. Gordon,
this is live radio.
This is live radio. It's like walking a tightrope without any net down there. Gordon, we have to talk about the coronavirus, and there's so much to say. We're not going to get it all said, but I want to talk to you about the. Oh, here comes Senator Blackburn. Can you wait just a second? I am so sorry. Okay, Marsha, have a seat.
Oh, she's with Sandy right now.
Hey, Senator Blackburn, how are you?
I'm good.
It's nice to see
you. Good to see you. Love the jacket.
Thank you. Well, you could. Well, you like. I love you style all the time too. I like the way you dress. You know that.
Yeah.
Hey, are you enjoying your time in the Senate?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How different? What's the difference for you? You've been in the House for a number of years.
Yeah, the Senate is a little more collaborative and collegial.
But is that good or bad? Don't you? I mean, is that good?
I think it's good. It gives me a chance. You know, sometimes what you have in the House is, no matter what you say, it's going to be no.
Yeah.
And I think in the Senate, you've got a chance. A great example is something I'm trying to do with rural healthcare professionals and do to get health professionals into rural areas, and Dick Durbin has joined me on it.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, he's from Southern Illinois.
Yeah, it's a conservative approach.
Well, now that is interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see how that works out. I'm okay. I'll give him his due on one thing in his life. But anyway, I'm glad you're working together on that. He's from my home state, and I'm from Southern Illinois.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very a lot of little towns. So I can see why he'd be interested in that.
Yeah.
What? Okay, so what else? There was a great pro-life victory this week in the courts. Of course, it's an executive order about defunding Planned Parenthood, but that's been a battle for so long in the Congress, you know, because you led the committee in the House to try to discover if Planned Parenthood was really selling baby body parts. What was your conclusion out of that hearing?
You know, out of, and I will tell you, one of the most impactful things I've ever done was to lead that select investigative panel looking into that. We issued 15 criminal referrals on these entities and sent them over to DOJ. And that was our role. It was an investigative committee. And what we were able to do was to shut down the selling, that marketplace for baby body parts. So it was significant. It was a change. It exposed big abortion and Planned Parenthood for how they had created a revenue stream. And of course, since that point in time, you have seen many abortion clinics close. And
oh, that's for sure.
We think that that is such a positive step. Also, it highlighted with the taxpayer, look, money is fungible. And what are they doing with your money? They are taking federal dollars. They are not delivering women's health care. They're referring them to the community health clinic for women's health. And they're...
In quotes.
Right. Yeah. And, well, if they needed a mammogram, if they needed dental care, where'd they send them? They sent them to the community health center. So we said, look, my legislation, I'm the one that has the legislation to defund these entities that do abortion and send all that money directly to the community health centers. So the court decision is something that is right in line with the president's executive order and right in line with my legislation, and it's something the American taxpayer wants to see happen.
I should explain better that the court, Trump administration, their ruling, or whatever you call that, there's all these different, it's not a law, was that tax dollars could not be spent on abortion. If you're going to do abortions, you had to do them in a separate building. So
that's
that
right.
The funds were not mixed together, because Planned Parenthood always said, we don't use those federal funds for abortion.
That's right.
So he
and
made them separate it.
One of the things I had said is, and one of the reasons my legislation says separate this, is because if they want to have a 501c3 that is for women's health and all that money goes to women's health, fine.
But
they
don't.
If they're going to do abortion, it has to be a separate business.
Well, they're the one. They actually then withdrew and said they didn't want the funds, didn't they? Rather than separate, I think that's what Planned Parenthood did next. So they're not interested in women's health, as you know. They're interested in abortion, which is big business. I just read an interesting article that I can't. I don't know where I am with the clock. So we're just going to talk until the music starts. I just read that I think Judicial Watch had uncovered that National Institute for Health is now buying themselves baby body parts for experimentation with mice. I just read that. I don't know if you don't have to know everything.
I haven't seen
but
that.
It's an incredible story. They had uncovered a lot of email exchanges. They were the humanization of mice. I think it was lit. It was just an incredible story. So it still goes on, as you well know.
Well, and, you know, we recently had two pro-life bills on the floor, and they both failed.
That's right. Born Alive?
Yeah, Born Alive, Abortion Survivors Act for these babies that survive a botched abortion. And we couldn't even get the Democrats to agree with us that these precious children that are born and they survive this abortion, they are a living, breathing human being. They would not even vote to say, yes, that child deserves medical care. It is astounding to me. They are so far to the left on this issue that their position is, well, let the mother decide if the baby's going to live or die.
Well, we saw that in Virginia.
Yes, we did.
With the governor, and it's just, isn't it interesting that the left is becoming more rabid and more open in their embrace of abortion for all 9 months for any reason? And it's causing some cowardly, I think, centrist to have to start thinking through and declare their own positions. So I think this is actually a good thing. I think the battle lines are becoming drawn and being clearer.
Well, and most women agree that if a baby survives an abortion, then that is a pretty tough little baby.
Yeah.
And it deserves to have that medical care.
But the Democrats don't agree with you. Senator Blackburn, it's such a pleasure to have you. There's the music. So
yes,
thank you so much for joining
good
me this morning.
Good to be with
morning.
You. Hope your listeners follow us on social media at Marsha Blackburn.
All right, there you go, Marsha Blackburn. Nice to see you. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
From whom the whole body, fitly joined together and compacted by that which every joint supplieth. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. It's not by chance that Jesus refers to his church as the body. Just as it is with our physical bodies, every member has a distinct role and function to fulfill. Unfortunately, in this era of celebrity Christianity, we've reduced the concept of ministry solely to what occurs and what is often little more than Sunday productions and performances. The key to thriving in God's kingdom is understanding that every member in the body of Christ is vital and is called to ministry.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
In a world that's tragically divided over countless issues, the gospel brings true unity. Scripture says that in Christ there is neither Jew nor Greek, neither slave nor free. But how can that be? Listen all this week to Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net. Today's culture is opting for entertainment rather than biblical enlightenment. For those who resist that trend, Friends of Israel shows listeners why loving the Jewish people and supporting Israel is important to the Christian faith. Friends of Israel shares biblical truth about Israel and the Messiah and promotes solidarity with the Jewish people.
This is Chris Katulka of the Friends of Israel Today radio program, heard each weekend on this station, and here's what's happening in Israel.
Friends of Israel, Saturday afternoon at 2, here on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Catholic Social Services is committed to placing vulnerable children in foster homes with a married mom and a dad. They know that's the optimal nurturing environment for young children. But Philadelphia kicked CSS out of its foster care program because they would not place children in same-sex households, which are suboptimal environments for children. The Constitution guarantees the free exercise of religion. Guided by their deeply held religious principles, Catholic Social Services has the guarantee of the Constitution that government cannot interfere with their free exercise of religion. The Supreme Court will hear this case in the fall. Here's hoping and praying the court will apply the Constitution the founders gave us and protect religious liberty and vulnerable young children in the city of brotherly love.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, Attorney General William Barr gave the latest in a series of positively Churchillian speeches about the challenges facing our country before the national religious broadcasters. Notably, he brilliantly channeled the most insightful chronicler of our country's formative years, Alexis de Tocqueville. General Barr recalled de Tocqueville's warning that in the absence of key checks that have protected our nation from the dangers of, quote, totalitarian democracy, unquote, we would inevitably be reduced to the tyrannical rule of an intolerant majority. The two men agreed that the most important of such checks were a national grounding in faith and morality, limited government in a federalized system where power is entrusted to leaders most accountable to the people, and an independent, free press. While our Attorney General professed optimism that we will restore these checks, the hour is late to do so. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Shameful. Puts forth a proposal now that is meager, anemic. What he's doing is late, too late, anemic.
Four words describe the administration's response to the coronavirus: towering and dangerous incompetence.
Sandy Rios with you. Yeah, so you have a choice. The coronavirus is either a pandemic and the world is going to end, the stock market will crash, all industry will be brought to its knees, or you can believe that it's a problem. It's spread in many, many countries, and you can be aware that no one here has died yet. And for a country of however many million we are, I think there's only like 38 cases, something like that. So what is the truth here? Is it dangerous? Is it not dangerous? You can bet that the media has an opinion. So Dan Gaynor, a media research center, of course, they track what the media says about everything and monitor, and you get this. You used to have like this big room with all these televisions. Do you still have that?
We have a lot of, we have a big bank of TVs as you come in our office, but a lot of what people do is now watch on computer screen because we have this massive DVR system that I think is the envy of like small countries.
I'm sure that's true. Oh, but also not the envy when you think of the volume of things that you guys have to watch.
We watch so you don't have to.
Yeah. All right, well, let me just say that Dan is the Vice President of Business, Culture, and Tech Watch for the Media Research Center. Media Research Center, of course, was founded by Brent Bozell. And, it's just remained a powerhouse here in Washington for decades now. And so, Dan, okay, on the coronavirus, let's just talk about that for a second. You guys, you said you don't have anything quantifiable yet.
Yeah, we haven't done any numbers yet, but I can tell you, I mean, you already saw just from Trump's presser yesterday, the reaction from CNN. Brian Stelter, the supposed media guy, who's just basically a hitman against the right, already reacting and saying, oh, we knew that we might get to a time when the fact that people don't take the administration seriously would really jeopardize the country, and talking about that. This is the same media who have done everything to oppose Trump, from stopping bringing in people from China. He said, oh, you can't do that. Stopping protecting us from in the border so you can't bring in people who might have diseases or, be criminal element. You know, they don't want to restrict anything, and then they want to blame Trump for whatever happens. It's a virus. You know, we do get virus every year. The people get the flu. A lot of people die every year from the flu. 30,000 people on average die from the flu in America. The reason why everybody's concerned is because in China, which is, China is different than us. I mean, the people.
Really? Are you kidding me? Bernie says it's a model for Bernie Sanders. It's a model for us.
Well, I mean, they people live closer. They're culturally they
the same sanitation. It's a third world country.
Yeah, and the question is how much this becomes an issue for the first world.
Yeah.
And another point, the media keep reporting the Chinese numbers for all this, when literally I don't know anybody in the health world, and I've been following this now for several weeks, actually probably a couple months. I don't know anybody in the health world considers what China is telling us to be the truth. They don't think what China told us before, that China was reluctant or unwilling to reveal when the first happened. So, as a model, state control of healthcare, this is actually 100% proof that state control of healthcare doesn't work. China kidnaps people off the street if it thinks you might be sick and dumps you into a hospital where you're not getting any care and says, oh, that's government healthcare.
You know, the other thing, I guess, look, we could say that you and I don't, even though we track this stuff, we don't know what the reality is of, how would we know, of the coronavirus, how dangerous it is. That's sort of unquantifiable yet, we're not sure. So we can't really declare that, but we do know this, the numbers show again, that no one has died here. And we have very few cases, really. That doesn't mean it's nothing. For those that are sick, it's a big deal. We don't want people to get sick. But we can also say that the left loves disease. Ever since I've been a kid, they find diseases to ramp up and get people panicked about.
Well, remember the Rahm Emanuel quote.
Yes, I do. Never waste a good crisis.
Right. So if you look at this, the left views this as an opportunity, and the media do too. The stock market is down the last couple of days, and a lot of analysts have said for a while it's due for a correction. This may be this, or it may be worse. It's impossible to tell. They want to be able to take the one of the pillars out from under Trump And they don't really care if it costs people jobs. They don't really care if it hurts the economy, it hurts your retirement. They want this. They want chaos, because chaos is opportunity, and they want an opportunity for whatever person who challenges Trump. So I mean, you know, the danger here could well be that the media help actually put, you know, some far left radical or socialist into the White House. That's what the media want to have happen.
Yeah, they do. And one other last thing, because you reminded me of it. I remember very well when HIV/AIDS became a big story in the world and in the country. And under President Obama's administration, they stopped the restrictions on bringing in people who are HIV positive. They allowed all kinds of immigrants to come here who were HIV positive, whereas you can pick that disease, but you can say, we used to be very careful about bringing only healthy people in. Whether they had whooping cough or any of the other diseases they brought from other countries, that was just standard practice to protect your own people.
Yeah, if you go back to Ellis Island, and immigrants who came to this country, you know, were tested for disease. And that's, I mean, it was a standard process. And if you couldn't
and
pass,
common sense,
you,
everybody,
you got sent home.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, look, I think that the important thing about any time you look at a situation like coronavirus or any disease or potential crisis is a lot of the initial media reporting is always wrong. If there's a shooting, you see, nobody was shot. Turns out a lot of people were shot. Nobody
we don't
was
know
shot.
Motive, and then we find out they yelled Allahu Akbar.
So yeah. We don't know now. It is wise not to panic. You know, this is the first world. We have a sophisticated healthcare system in this country. And, you know, so no matter what, I think that should be the message instead of, oh, my God, running around with your hair on fire.
Yeah, right. But so common sense dictates this, that you can know the media is going to exaggerate it. And so, all right. Okay, enough of that. Let's talk about what is the most notable thing you guys have seen, trend or something that the media has done? There's so many choices. But what's kind of stunned you lately as you watch?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, for myself, since I'm on a panel talking about Tech Watch, talking about media bias, is how much the major media want the tech companies to discriminate against conservatives and to restrict speech. So you've got, I mean, you saw this video that came out the other day after the Democratic debates, put up by Mike Bloomberg. It was a funny video. Bloomberg had two good lines in the debates. One of them was how he mentioned he had founded a company and asked if anybody else at the panel had done it. Now, it was like 2 seconds of response where nobody responded, but they extended it out and put crickets in the background, so you knew it was a humorous video, and all the major media freaked out about it and want to ban it. And so the reason for it is they see him as a stalking horse for Trump. They're like, okay, we can ban Mike Bloomberg's content, we can ban Trump's content. That's what they want to do. They've been begging the major social media companies to restrict advertising. All of the problems that we're all having on social media go back to Trump winning in 2016.
Yes.
It was okay when Obama won in 2008 or 2012 on the back of social media. When Trump did it in 2016, they had sought to basically overturn the platforms so that they can control the platforms like they control traditional media.
Well, and you know, that's an issue that everyone listening knows, Dan. That's not like some ethereal thing we're talking about here. They've all posted things that have been removed. They can't access certain things, even my show for people listening. But other, you know, we are regularly banned, or whether it's Twitter or Facebook. Or now Facebook has made a pretty extraordinary decision for this election cycle. I don't know if you feel it's as good as it should be. To explain that.
Well, a couple months ago, Mark Zuckerberg gave a speech at Georgetown University. And he basically said, look, despite the pressure for us to restrict speech, our values are more toward free speech. We're going to try to go that route. He was reviled by the major media who want speech restricted all across all these platforms. They continue to pressure him. And look, I think Zuckerberg is right in a key point. They are not skilled enough to decide what should be on and what shouldn't be on. I mean, and none of these companies are.
Who could be? Who would be?
Can't be. So,
like we've talked about coronavirus, who really knows? I mean, really.
So the Media Research Center leads a coalition of conservative organizations, more than 60 strong, tens of millions of conservatives And one of the things, we've got four principles. One of the key principles is simple. We urge these companies to mirror the First Amendment, that they should be exporting American freedoms and not importing foreign totalitarianism.
Because they are American companies.
Exactly.
And there's a reason for that. And, yeah, I remember having that discussion, with some of the principals. Like, why don't you just do that? Why do you feel obligated to be Europe? Why do you feel obligated to be you're an American company, so you can set the standard. So it's interesting, but I was shocked that Facebook actually agreed. I mean, really, and that's so the other companies are pretty upset with Mark Zuckerberg, aren't they?
Absolutely, and one of the reasons is all these companies tend to march somewhat in lockstep on major decisions,
and so, with the other companies,
yeah, right, yeah. Together, and so they so they're all getting the same pressure from the media. They're all getting the pressure from Europe. I mean, it's funny. You see these organizations, they'll have meetings like, we're going to ban what they call white supremacist content. Because there's like a very, very tiny number of people. But you don't see them going around banning socialist content.
No.
You know, you got socialist countries like Venezuela that abuse their population, kill their citizens. You don't see them talk about banning that.
No, and, I was just reading an update on Geert Wilder, who is the guy from the Netherlands who has warned the Netherlands about Islamic influence and the dangers.
Radicalism, yeah.
Tremendous risk to himself. He's been on trial for, I think, nearly a decade now for simply saying bad things about Islam. That's where we're headed. If we cannot say what we think, people are being criminalized. It's being criminalized. Speech is being criminalized. Europe is getting used to that.
Well, I mean, I had on Twitter one day, I said something pro-Second Amendment, and somebody alerted me as hate speech in the UK. Now, I responded and said no, and I didn't hear any more about it, but that's the kind of, there's a global platform. I know Michelle Malkin and several others have heard from Pakistan, where they've been accused of blasphemy, Pakistan. And, look, we're America, we don't have to obey your darn laws, but if we're not careful, just as we have this privacy law from Europe, the EU, the GDPR, they may be able to set regulations about hate speech, and these companies may follow them.
Yeah,
and that's the danger.
And that's why the decision by Facebook to publicly declare that they would embrace, at least for now, the First Amendment,
some semblance
of free speech on their platform was huge, because Facebook really still is the big dog, is it not?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you've got 2.5 billion people around the world. That's basically, it's got close to the population of the two largest nations combined, China and India. So I mean, it's incredibly influential, and the media want to bring him to heel. So now the downside is Mark Zuckerberg was in Europe the other day calling for more regulation because they don't feel like they're the ones who should be making these decisions. They want government to give them an out.
Yes, and they've been doing that here too. But so far, our government's been kind of caught up with impeachment. That's about all they've been accomplishing in the last few years. But maybe that's a blessing, huh?
Yes, the idea of part-time legislature has its appeal.
Yeah, exactly. Dan, on Twitter, what can you say about Twitter? Because they're probably the worst platform, don't you think?
The major media, YouTube, the major platforms, they're very restrictive.
Yeah.
Particularly coming from the era where Twitter was the Wild West, where you could say anything and do anything,
yeah.
And it was they restrict more. And Jack Dorsey has talked about this so-called healthy conversation. Anybody who's ever spent 15 minutes on Twitter knows that it's healthy free speech. It's in fact the same message that the left taught us, the ACLU, and Nat Hentoff and others. Preached for decades. All my life, I was bombarded by this idea: more free speech, more speech is better speech.
Yes.
And so then, as soon as they realize, hey, wait a second, conservatives have speech, they say, oh, that's got to go away then.
Yeah.
And so now they want speech restriction, and the people who are running around talking about free speech are conservatives.
And that's what Media Research Center is fighting through this Free Speech Coalition. By the way, we're America Family Association is part of the Free Speech Coalition.
I was going to make that point. I knew you would, though.
And Dan, thank you. Listen, thanks for all of your hard work for all these many years. You're a partner in the battle, buddy.
Thanks.
Yeah,
God bless you.
God bless you, too, Dan. All right, it's been great to be live here at Radio Row at CPAC, and we'll be back tomorrow with more great guests. So tune in tomorrow, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.